Good afternoon, it's 3:02 PM, Wednesday, September 26, 2018. I call this a regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Brian Krashus and Julie Fedorchak. I do not have any opening comments. Commissioner Krashus, do you?
No, I do not.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I do not.
Okay, we'll move right into the agenda. I guess it is kind of an opening comment. We're starting later than normal. We'd normally start at 10. There was a conference going on in Fargo, and that delayed the timing back a little bit. So, on our consent calendar, there are 8 items plus approval of previous minutes, and I move adoption.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. My first regular agenda item, RC1. I move the commission present the 2018 North Dakota Award for Excellence in Surface Coal Mining and Reclamation to BNI Coal Limited, the Falkirk Mining Company, the Coteau Properties Company, and the Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC.
Second.
Our state reclamation award program sets out the criteria for presenting a reclamation award at the Lignite Energy Council's annual meeting. That meeting is now being held in the spring instead of in the fall, but they have requested that we present the award at the fall conference, which this year is scheduled for October 3rd. If no mining company submits a self-nomination for the yearly award, the Reclamation Division may provide the Commission with an award recommendation. We did not receive any company nominations for 2018. Therefore, the staff recommends that this year's award be presented to the 4 companies I named for their financial support and participation of a multifaceted reclamation research project. The research project includes an evaluation of management practices to improve soil and vegetation parameters of reclaimed North Dakota coal mine lands. Staff believes the collective efforts of these 4 companies, as described in the nomination, are very deserving of the award. Soil compaction is inherent in the soil removal and respread processes. Compacted soils tend to inhibit water movement and root penetration into the soil profile, thus affecting crop and native grassland establishment and production of reclaimed lands. In addition, over the past 20 years or so, Kentucky bluegrass has invaded reclaimed and undisturbed native grasslands both, and I want to emphasize that. It's not just the reclaimed issue on mine land. This is this impeding on native grasslands all over the state. It's an invasive non-native species problem, and it's not unique to reclaimed land, as I said. There's been very limited reclamation research conducted in the state over the past 20 years for a variety of reasons, including lack of funding and other priorities. These mining companies saw the need and opportunity for applied research to address these 2 problems, the compaction and the invasive species. Each of the mines provided financial support for the projects. The NDSC School of Natural Resource Sciences has been contacted to do this multi-year research. Research plots have been or will be established at each of the cooperating mines. The research will evaluate various physical and biological treatments to alleviate compaction of reclaimed soils. In addition, methods to minimize Kentucky bluegrass abundance on reclaimed native grassland will also be investigated. The information gained from these projects will be applicable to all mined land reclamation in the state and region, including other reclamation activities such as pipelines and other oil field activities. So I believe the research support and participation provided by these 4 companies certainly merits this award, and so it's kind of unusual that we have 4 instead of 1, but they're all participating in it jointly. And when I took this to the Lignite Research Council meeting quite a few months ago for the award of some state dollars to add to their dollars for the research project, really nobody in the room could remember the last time we did reclamation research out of that. We do a lot of other research, but in the LRC meeting, Dean remembers, but in the LRC meeting, I think it was pretty much sent before anyone's memory. So appreciate this opportunity, and I think it's well-deserved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And I've just noticed my microphone is not on, so I'll have to go through that all again, unless we can all agree that there is nothing really technical in there, just background, so I think we can go without repeating it. We'll move on to RC2 now. My microphone is on.
I think you should do it again. What do you think, Brian?
Well, I want to see if you can do it as good the second time as the first time.
How about this? I'll keep it in my memory bank. If everyone wants to hear it again at the end of the meeting, we'll do it again. RC2, I move the commission adopt the order certifying use of Federal Universal Services Support and Public Service Commission USF Use Certification 47 CFR 54.314. 2019 compliance case number PU-18-284.
Second.
Telecommunications Act of 1996, about the same time ago as since we last did reclamation research, requires that states must file an annual certification that all federal high-cost support provided carriers within the state was used in the preceding calendar year and will be used in the coming calendar year only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended. On August 28th of 2002, I'm not stating that wrong, of 2002, the PSC issued an order indicating that any telecom carrier providing local exchange service in the state that desires to have PSC certification to the FCC shall file an affidavit with the commission by September 14th of each year, certifying that federal support they receive is used only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended, as the Act states. The PSC further ordered that affidavits filed will be on the basis of the PSC's certification to the FCC. Affidavits have been filed by the companies that are listed in here. I'm not going to read them all off. There's about 40 of them. The commission will send a copy of each of the filed affidavits to the FCC and to the Universal Service Administrative Company.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And RC3, I move the commission approve Falkirk Mining Company's request for a variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 26.3 acres of reclaimed cropland in the southeast quarter of Section 30 and the northeast quarter of Section 31 of Township 146 North, Range 81 West in McLean County, where revegetation was delayed until a sedimentation pond was removed and reclaimed.
Second.
On August 10th of this year, Falkirk filed a request for this variance, in McLean County. The variance from the 10-year liability period will allow an area where that sedimentation pond was reclaimed in 2012 to be bond released with the adjacent lands that were reclaimed in 2003, 2005, and 2007. For this exception to the 10-year variance period, the variance areas must be small in size when compared to the entire reclamation tract, and the affected land must meet the reclamation success standards when final bond release is requested. The permittee must affirmatively demonstrate that reclamation of the area will provide equal or greater protection to the environment and to public health and safety. Reclamation procedures used in the variance areas need to provide the same provisions as those used on the surrounding reclaimed tracts. This 26.3-acre variance request area is part of a larger tract containing 227 acres. The reclaimed pond site has been farmed with the adjacent reclaimed cropland within this bond release tract since 2013. The proposed variance areas have been reviewed during several inspections. No issues were identified during the field inspections. So staff has completed its review of the request and recommends approval of this variance for those 26.3 acres.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
You moved on a little too fast before I could form my thought, Daryl, but I just will say to that, I think that this small variance within a much larger tract that allows that larger tract now to be bonded out about 5 years sooner than if we couldn't give this variance just where the pond was released. This flexibility of a state program is part of what makes our program, although tougher in many cases than federal law, better and more popular with the mining companies, and certainly better for the citizens of the state and for the environment. So really just a perfect example of the quality of having a state program like ours. That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Crash is here.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law and order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, 2017 natural gas rate increase, application case number PU-17-295.
Second.
Okay, I'm going to condense this as much as I can. The original request, revenue request, was for $5.9 million. Or a 5.4% increase over current rates. An interim rate increase of $4.6 million or 4.2% was granted. And then, of course, we had the impact of the TCJA, Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which then reduced that amount to $2.7 million. And then the settlement is for $2.5 million or an increase of 2.3%. Which amounts to $1.27 per customer. One component in the request was for replacement projects for aging infrastructure and at-risk infrastructure due to the age of those facilities and also type of material used in some cases. A lot of conversation centered around that. And some of that work is being done in 2018. And from that work being done currently or in this current year, I think we'll see have more science and data to determine whether or not going forward more work like this should be done. And this all relates back to balancing public safety with cost, of course. And I was just looking at some examples in terms of you know, what can happen when there are gas line leaks. And if you go back to just May of 2017, north of Denver, approximately 25 miles, a house was leveled, resulting in two deaths, one critical injury. This past year alone, just a few months ago in Wisconsin, a firefighter was killed in a natural gas explosion in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. And in August of this year, a natural gas leak destroyed an apartment building in Denver with 9 injuries, one critically injured in that. And while these weren't perhaps, you know, exactly the same in terms of a system that was aging and had resulted in aging infrastructure resulting in a leak, but rather just what can happen when, whether it's a contractor, an excavator that damages a line, whether something isn't done properly, but when infrastructure used to distribute natural gas leaks and it isn't safe, some very bad things can happen. So that's important to keep in mind in terms of public safety. And then the other part, you know, with any rate case, and I think it depends on your perspective and how you look at it, and something that is, you know, frankly, a bit challenging at times is determining what class of ratepayer, what generation of ratepayer should pick up those costs. when a system is being replaced, or if we're looking at accelerating system replacement, rather than letting it build toward the end, whether it be with natural gas or other types of facilities. So that's always a tough element to balance out in all of this. But I like a proactive approach. Personally, I think it's smart, and I think it's also difficult. For myself, I'm not running the utility. I'm regulating their rate structure with my vote, one of three votes. But that's probably one of the more challenging aspects in terms of when is the appropriate time. And of course, if you have any type of infrastructure in the ground that potentially is compromised, we need to see science and data to back that up, of course. But if there is an issue out in the field, it has to be addressed. So the settlement is a fairly small increase of $1.27, as mentioned, and that was certainly reduced as a both from the work of staff, did a great job working on the settlement, and then taking into account the Tax Cut and Jobs Act impact.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I do have a couple questions. And I don't know, they might be more for staff than for the portfolio holder, but maybe you know them. But I had reviewed this early this morning and got here now from my previous meeting, and there's differences in some cases that I can't find. Things have shifted around. And so I'm looking at page 5, and on the version that I had looked at, finding a fact number 14 is on the bottom of page 5, but it's not on the one that I'm looking at now. And I'm wondering what changed there that shifted that off that page, because I can't find the change.
I think that was just a formatting thing in the various iterations. I looked at the same thing, and 14 is now up on the top of the next page.
I see it there, but I'm just wondering, did anything change in there that I'm missing? And someone from staff must know whether there was any changes made to that. These sections 11, 12, and 13, or findings of fact 11, 12, and 13.
I don't think there were any changes in those. It might have been just the way the paging had came out in substantive copies. If you, our major change was section 24. Finding 24, I mean.
Right, that one is clear. I can see that.
And then there are other little things, like your addition of an and word and some typo stuff like that were fixed.
And then what's, just tell me the point of the change in order number 3.
The original version was changed from may till shall. And it had originally said may file, it was shall file now. And then the rest of the sentence was reworded accordingly.
I had requested that change, and I may not have been the only one, I don't know. But again, it goes back to, this was presented as a part of the request that there are aging infrastructure components that are in need of replacement. And again, citing just a few examples among, unfortunately, many that are out there, what happens when system integrity is compromised, there are very serious consequences. So because it was broached that there may be an issue, and this isn't to alarm the public that the system isn't safe, but some of these projects may need to be moved up, I really personally didn't want to wait And even though it is ultimately the company's responsibility to maintain a safe system, I want to know sooner versus later if there is something out there that we need to be concerned about in terms of pipes in the ground. So that's why it shall produce that. And that's how I felt about that.
And then on the bottom of page 7, we have 3 orders on the bottom of the page. Right?
3 orders. 3 points?
Yes.
Page 7?
Yes.
That was where we used to close with 24. Okay, gotcha.
Under the order.
Yep.
There's 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
On the next page, should those be 4 and 5 then?
You're right.
So that it's not okay. Somehow, it's just they should all 5 be in there is what we're voting on. It's just that they're misnumbered.
Yeah.
Yeah, number 3 is in there twice. We'll fix that.
Okay.
And 4 needs to be changed to 5 on the very last.
Do you have anything else, Randy?
No.
Okay. Just a couple comments from my own perspective on this case, since it's taken a good chunk of our time. So, first of all, I want to thank staff and the company for their hard work on getting through all of this. We had some really good discussions, and I think we all learned a lot in the process. The rate of return is one piece that I often hear about from the public, and I think it's important to note, and I wanted to make this point here today since it's fresh, that the rate of return is allowable. It is not guaranteed, and I think sometimes customers think guaranteed, and I just wanted to make that point, that that is the allowable rate of return. The company still has to run their business in a way that allows them to meet that and to earn that. But it isn't somehow that these rates guarantee them to earn that. We think that it's a fair rate of return, and the rates should allow them to make it, but it isn't guaranteed. The second one point I wanted to make is that, just to emphasize that the reduction in revenue requirements as a result of the tax cuts was $3.5 million. So there again, customers will never have to pay that, because that is money that was taken off the table by the tax cuts, $3.5 million less in terms of an increase to customers. So we continue to see the benefits of that tax cut. And then finally, a couple comments on the safety. I agreed with Brian on the shall. I had the same thing marked. I was hoping that somebody else, one of my other colleagues, hadn't changed it from shall to may, and then we were going to have to argue about that, because I also think shall is important, because while the company brought this forward and we're denying them the tracker in this order, I think it's important to send the message that we realize this is important and we want to work with the company on it. And so we are asking and requiring them to come back and address these issues that we felt were missing in the original case. And they made a good case for how they monitor their system, what's out there to some extent, that they do have a rating system, but there was information lacking in terms of what the need is. Why is it needed to be replaced now? Why is it prudent to do that now? And so staff has a long list of issues that they are going to be looking for and working with the company to provide to get us that information so that we can have a fully informed discussion about the prudence and the need, so that we know that we're making these investments and increasing the charges to customers at the right time to address these identifiable needs and keep the system as safe as possible. So that's why I felt that it was important to direct the company to come back by next May and provide that information and continue this discussion about refreshing the natural gas infrastructure system that serves all of North Dakota customers. All right. MDU, North Dakota MDU customers.
Is there any further discussion?
I had my technical questions before and agree with what Commissioner Fedorchak just said, that Commissioner Karasius has changed to shall was a good one, and appreciate the explanation and staff going through the small things that were deviated. I'll just say overall on the motion and the rate case itself, these rates, I think, allow the companies the revenue to provide their services dependably and safely, which is the big priority, and yet limits that revenue stream to only what they really need so that we keep these rates as low as possible. And under this structure, North Dakota citizens will continue to enjoy a very favorable residential utility rates.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission adopt the order on settlement in Otter Tail Power Company 2017 electric rate increase application case number PU-17-398.
Second.
Okay, the original request came in on November 2nd of this past year in 2017. And similar to the previous case, was extended slightly because of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. The original revenue request was $15.7 million, which was 10.61%. The interim rate granted was $12.8 million. That dropped by $4.5 million because of the TCJA to $8.3 million. And the settlement is at $4.6 million. So in terms of, you know, one of the questions, what does that mean to the average residential customer? And in this case, the average residential customer, it nets out when you factor everything in at about $5.50 per month approximately. I think one point that's important to note is that Otter Tail has not had a rate case since 2008. So it's been quite some time since that has occurred, and the 2017, their rate of return in 2017, in fact, we were going to get a final number on that, but was significantly lower than the allowable return. So nobody likes rate increases. I certainly understand that, but it still goes back to system reliability and the fact that costs do go up, and it has been a decade since we've had a rate case. So we want dependable service. As a consumer, I certainly do. Reliable service is important, and making sure that the companies providing that service remain healthy and have the resources to continue to serve their customers dependably is very important. And one other point, we do enjoy, as North Dakotans, some very competitive energy rates, both in terms of natural gas service and electric service. And that's not the case in other parts of the country. So very competitive rates and some very good companies that provide service to our customer base. Or I should say to their customer base, to the North Dakota citizens.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I have a question again, on this time on page 6. In the version I had this morning, the second paragraph is gone and replaced by the second and third paragraphs of this order. Is the residential rate being set at $14 a month or limited to no higher than $14 a month?
It is being set at $14 a month for the base charge.
That's what my version this morning said, but this says no higher than.
I thought that's the language that was included in the company's offer on the settlement agreement, saying that they would agree to this language.
If you're looking at the graph or the spreadsheet, that was the proposed customer charge.
I was looking at page 6.
What's your finding number, Randy?
It's not a finding number.
They're not numbered. That's on page 6.
It's mentioned again in the 6th paragraph. And it's, that is interesting, actually. Language, no higher than 14.
And this morning it said, should be reduced to $14.
As I'm remembering, this should be reduced was the commission's finding, and the other language was up there when it described what Ottertail agreed that they would do in the discussions. The charge was to be, the way they said it is $14 a month or higher. What they meant was they'd be willing to go down to $14 a month. And I took or higher language out of there somewhere. I can't remember exactly where right now.
Somehow or another,
the rates can be
been changed from reduced to $14 to no higher than $14. And I don't understand why. And I'm sure that's what it's going to be anyway, so maybe right. It doesn't matter, but I'm trying to understand if this means something since someone changed it.
Commissioners, it was changed yesterday. It wasn't changed today, I don't believe, but it may have been that you just read it today. The company statement that they would agree to something lower than what they had asked for down to 14, that's in there just as evidence of their statement. The staff wrote the ordering provision at no higher than, because we're not really in the habit of setting those charges, we're allowing them to set those charges. And if for some reason they choose to go to $13.50, and I guess I don't know that we have a problem with it as a commission. So that's why when it was at one point set at, and then Pat and I thought that was kind of inappropriate to have that kind of language in the order. I think we changed that yesterday, but that doesn't mean we changed it, a week ago when you had time to read it. But
I was sent to me last night at 5. I had all evening to read it, and I double-checked this morning to see if it had been changed, and there was nothing.
I think the wrong version went out last night. I apologize. I mean, I do. We've been juggling these and trying to get them out, but that was the change made, and it was Pat and I that had discussed it and concluded to change it.
Okay.
So thank you. I will modify my previous comment slightly in that it's not an absolute that the charge will be 14, but I think there's an extremely high probability that it will be 14.
But we're okay with it being lower.
We are okay with it being lower.
Is there any further discussion?
Did you have any other comments to make about it? Okay. Again, I think it's worth reemphasizing the first time in 10 years. That's pretty amazing that the rates have been pretty stable for the last 10 years. And I think it's also an indication of what we heard during this rate case, that the company is undergoing significant changes in their generation fleet. And those changes come at some expense to customers. And so they're adding a lot of renewables. They're retiring some old facilities. They're building a new gas plant. And not all of those are reflected in this case, but some of those additions are. And so I think it's just an indication of what's happening in general in the electric industry with the changing of the refreshing of the systems. The other big change that customers will see as a result of these new rates and coming soon for Ottertail customers is a new customer information system that's supported by this rate case, and that customer information system is going to provide some great new information and new tools available to Autotel customers to interface with the company and perhaps have more transparency on their bill. So I think that's going to be a big change for Autotel customers and made possible by this rate case or supported by this rate case. So those are a couple of the highlights from my perspective.
Is there any further discussion?
I'll add, though, as in the MDU case before this, I think this, again, provides the revenue needed for the company to provide their services safely and dependably. But, again, no more than that, so that we keep the rates as low as possible and continue to have very favorable residential utility rates in the state.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on settlement in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, tax reform effects, rates, case number PU-18-89.
I don't know if I should second this now or make my substitute.
I'll second it for discussion.
Okay. So, if this is the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the commission substitute a motion for the motion currently under consideration in this case.
Go ahead.
Is that a second then?
You'd have to make I will allow you to make the substitute motion.
Okay. I move the commission adopt the order on settlement approving the settlement only if revised to reduce revenue to return to customers 100% of the tax-affected 2018 annual plant EDIT and calculate customer refunds accordingly in MDU Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., tax reform effects, rates, case number PU-18-89.
And I'll second that for purpose of discussion. And so we will discuss the substitute motion. Take a vote on it. I'm making sure our attorney's paying attention to what I say to make sure I state it correctly. We'll take a vote on it. If it passes, then the vote on the substitute motion, the first vote will be whether to accept it as a substitute, and then it will require a subsequent motion to accept the order, correct?
Right.
But if that first motion fails, then we will go back to discussing the original motion.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I really appreciate staff's and the company's work on this tax reform issue. I know it's complicated. I know it's taken a ton of time. But based on our work session, I hope that my proposal isn't a huge surprise. I think the settlement is 97% good. And I say that it's 97% good because it returns 97% of the revenue collected from customers back to customers. This wasn't a full-blown rate case where we looked at the needs of the company, where we analyzed the revenues and expenses with an eye towards correcting shortfalls, this isn't an issue of having an identified outstanding project or a known need to be addressed. The company is under-earning their allowable rate of return, so I understand the compromise reached to allow them to retain a portion of these revenues. However, I feel in this case it's more appropriate for customers to receive 100% of the benefits of the tax cuts by having 100% of the excess deferred taxes no longer owed to the federal government returned to the ratepayers. So I hope my colleagues will consider this approach.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion?
I wonder if I should. No, I'll do that if we go any further. There is a revised order also to go with this if we get to that point.
Again, this is a motion to determine whether or not we're going to institute a substitute motion. So is there any further discussion?
The goal here the only difference is that share of the annual plant EDIT that in the previous motion that they would have kept a share of that
In
for
the
earnings.
Correct.
Other than that, everything else would be the same, correct?
Correct. Yeah. The settlement calls for customers receiving a vast majority of the tax cuts back, but the 25% of the tax-affected 2018 annual plant EDIT would be retained by the company, approximately $300,000. And so this substitute motion would approve, or the substitute order that goes with this motion would approve the settlement agreement, except for it would say that having considered this matter, the commission finds MDU's retention of 25% of the tax-affected 2018 plant EDIT is not acceptable, and implementing the settlement agreement with 100% of the plant EDIT returned to customers will result in just the reasonable rates.
Okay. I think that this is, you know, similar enough that I am not going to lay this over for a future meeting, but it is complex enough. Commissioner Krosh, as you had the original motion, and it's your portfolio. If you would like to take 5 or 10 minutes or something to evaluate this or something, I am willing to stand in recess for a few minutes. If you're ready to proceed with a vote, we will proceed with the vote.
Well, to be perfectly honest, it's something I went back and forth on. And again, I'm not running MDU. I'm a regulator in terms of their rates. And the part I struggled with going back and forth on the 3%, again, 97%, the vast majority is going back to the ratepayer. What I struggled with was I would have liked to have seen more data, no doubt about it. There's no question on that. But at the same time, are we delaying replacement costs? And just one example that was used and was to accelerate replacement of some underground wiring that was experiencing, as the company indicated, more outages than they would normally expect, and then we get into reliability and service concerns. So, you know, there are a lot of ways to go about this, in some ways it's six of one and literally half dozen of the other, because there are other mechanisms to come back, demonstrate a need, and whether it, you know, potentially be through a rider mechanism or, which I really wouldn't want to see, is to push up, at the end of the day, the next rate case. So that's the part I balance those different factors out. I can live with it either way because, again, I think the mechanisms are in place.
Well, from my perspective, I just feel like this tax, from the very beginning, we asked the companies to figure out what isn't needed, you know, what is being collected and not going to be turned to turned over to the government, and then we'll have a discussion about getting that back to the customers. And so retaining it for other needs that haven't been fully vetted or are relatively new to the commission, they haven't been discussed significantly. We just had a rate case. The rates aren't that old. I feel like we talked thoroughly about the company's needs at that time. And if there is something wrong with the rates that isn't providing the company with the revenues they need to function effectively, then we need to address that. Adding another $300,000 that was collected for taxes to me isn't the way to do it. So I think it's not that big of a deal. It's 97% good. I just think it's better if we do 100%.
Is there any further discussion?
Do you want any more time to pause? Are you ready to vote?
Sure.
Okay, so this is a vote on substituting the motion. Then, if it passes, that substitute motion will be in front of us for discussion.
Okay. I'm proceeding with the roll call vote. Commissioner Christman.
Aye.
Commissioner Crosius.
Aye.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Okay. Should I proceed, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay, I move the commission adopt.
Well, actually, if Commissioner Crosius prefers to go first, it's still your portfolio, and it's primarily the original motion. So if you would like to proceed first, you may. If not, have Commissioner Fedorchak explain it.
Would you make the motion first?
The motion is in front of us, so that's
I think it's my motion, isn't it? I mean, yes, I made the substitute motion.
It's his portfolio, so I will offer him first chance to discuss it.
Oh, shouldn't I make it, though?
No, it's made.
Oh, okay.
No, the motion is not.
Yes, it is made. Not the
motion. No, we had to approve these, that the substitute motion would be made. Now the substitute
It was
motion.
Made, and I seconded it.
That was...
Okay, go ahead, but I disagree. Go ahead.
I move the commission adopt the order on settlement, approving the settlement only if revised to reduce revenue to return to customers 100% of the tax-affected 2018 annual plant EDIT and calculate customer refunds accordingly. In Montana, Dakota Utility Companies, a division of MD Resource Group, Inc., tax reform effects, rate case number PU-18-89.
Second.
Okay, so the revised order, which I believe you all have, is the same except for the final paragraph before the ordering statements, and that final paragraph should read, having considered this matter, the commission finds MDU's retention of 25% of tax affected 2018 plant EDIT is not acceptable. Implementing the settlement agreement with 100% of the plant EDIT returned to customers will result in just and reasonable rates. Therefore, the commission orders the following. And then it says in order number one, the settlement agreement attached to and made a part of this order is approved except for MDU's retention of 25% of tax affected 2018 plant EDIT. Number two, MDU shall adjust base rate to return to 100% of the tax affected 2018 plant EDIT, and then the rest is the same.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Actually, number four in the ordering, I don't know if it was changed on the final, but should be removed, that calls for the company providing a detailed expenditure plans and progress towards replacing vintage underground cable. That would have to be removed in the final order, revised order.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, I will say that from the day the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act became law, I don't think there's been disagreement, but I'll speak for myself. I've insisted that North Dakota utility companies would pass their benefits on to the consumers. That goes back to, look in the old minutes, December 20th of last year. And I said then that assuming the new tax law goes into effect, because it was only an assumption, and part of our discussion at that on that day was, has the House voted yet? I'm not sure if they're going to vote later that day or if it was in a day or two. But to our knowledge, they hadn't voted, but we weren't even sure about that. But we knew the concept that was being discussed. And I said then that staff should be doing an investigation of what the impact will be on regulated utilities and that there should be some significant savings, the way it sounded, and that I think that those should be passed on to ratepayers for MDU Electric. This today is the fulfillment of that effort, and it is retroactive to day one of the lower tax rates, and I think that's very important for consumers to know, because there was some discussion, had to do with a different utility in a different part of the state and a different commission out of our jurisdiction, and some discussion about, oh, a different commission got theirs done faster. Well, someone may be faster in this world of regulatory activity, but I don't think anybody is more efficient and detailed than the North Dakota PSC. I'm very proud of that. It took us a little longer, but again, the change is retroactive to day one. The consumers will get the benefits.
Is there further discussion?
Just another little shout out on this issue. The in this case, the savings for customers is going to be more than $8.5 million, and so that is $8.5 million that goes to every single MDU customer, regardless of income, regardless of business. It affects all the rate classes. Everybody benefits from this. So it's a really good example of how the tax cuts are impacting everybody. And that is money that is going to be in the pockets of families, it's going to be in the pockets of business, it's going to be circulating around in our communities, and that's a significant boost. And so I think that it's a great additional story of success from the Tax Cuts Act passed by Congress last December.
Is there any further discussion?
I did some rough math, if you will, and if you looked at North Dakota, and let's say that there are, because I don't have the counts for the co-ops in terms of how many meters they have out there, but let's say there are 1 million gas and electric meters in the state, and if the average household, and they're not all households, some have, you know, they've got some businesses, but if you applied $4 per month to those 1 million meters, that's $4 million a month or $48 million per year in terms of money that now can be reinserted into the North Dakota economy. I mean, it's an incredible number when you look at the math. If it's $3, it's $36 million. At 2, it would be $24 million. So it has a substantial effect. And one thing, I was speaking to a group last week, and actually another group this week, and just talking about the Tax Cut and Jobs Act and just giving generic examples. But for a business, particularly one that I came from, the electric costs were very high. And small increases drove up operating costs considerably. So that all goes back to impacting what type of increases employees may get in terms of annual wage increases, benefits, because everything adds up in terms of expenses. So for the Main Street businesses and especially our ag community, with times being tough because of low commodity prices, every little bit helps, and in some cases this is more than just a little for some of the larger operators.
Is there any further discussion? Let's see, none again. This is voting on the substitute motion. I will proceed with a roll call vote. Commissioner Christman.
Aye.
Commissioner Crosius.
Aye.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Aye.
The motion has been approved.
Okay, my final motion. I move the commission adopt the order in Bach & Link Pipeline LLC, Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, Cancellation, application case number PU-18-217.
Second.
Okay, this dates back to February of 2012 when the commission issued a certificate of corridor compatibility for Bach & Link Pipeline, which is a 132-mile bidirectional 12-inch and 8-inch crude oil pipeline in Billings, Stark, McKenzie, and Williams County. In September of 2014, the commission issued a certificate of public convenience and necessity to serve a catchment area, which was all of the land within approximately 10 miles on either side of the pipeline. Then fast forward to June 2018, Bach & Link filed an application to cancel the certificate of public convenience and necessity. And then on July 6th, this year, Bach & Link filed an application to replace and substitute the June 26th filing. And then on July 9th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, provided until August 3rd to receive comments or requests for hearing. None were received. And this was The application was, you know, just dating back, the application was made at a time when the ability to move crude oil by pipeline in the Bakken was certainly more limited than it is today. So takeaway capacity was well below production levels at the time, and no additional crude oil pipeline capacity was anticipated at that time. But then what happened, of course, Dakota Access Pipeline came online, and as the company states, those concerns have been alleviated to a great extent with respect to current production levels. And I think that's important when we say in respect to current production levels, because now we're over 1.2 million barrels of production in the Bakken per day. That could certainly increase. Crude oil pricing is very favorable right now. I think WTI is in the $72, $73 range. And as crude oil prices, if they continue to creep up or even hold at this level, production is going to continue to increase. Dakota Access is essentially full. They're going to add a little bit of capacity, but that space is taken. And then as oil production increases in the Bakken, there's essentially it's either going to move by rail in greater volumes, not likely anytime really soon to hit previous rail shipment levels, but it's going to go up. There's no doubt about it, and times will, you know, likely change again if those production levels continue to move up. And one other point, the commission did recently grant authority to Bakken Link to transport natural gas liquids or Y-grade products through 42 miles of the pipeline.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you. I have two pretty brief motions. I move the commission adopt the order on amended certificate of corridor compatibility route permit in Senex Pipeline LLC 10-inch refined fuels pipeline, Williams Montreal Ward siting application case number PU-17-97.
Second.
The commission granted an original order for this pipeline on March 14th of this last year. And then on July 11th, Senex filed a combined application to amend that original order. That amendment is being required or requested because of two route changes requested by landowners along the pipe. And so the company has done the necessary environmental and cultural resource studies to show that the location, construction, operation of the new route will produce minimal effects on the environment and welfare of the citizens of the state. It does not affect any known exclusion or avoidance areas, these reroutes, and they provided the necessary documentation affidavits to confirm that. And so I feel that this is a good change. I applaud the company's extra effort to accommodate the needs and the desires of the landowners and addressing their concerns and going to the extra effort to make these changes in their proposed project. So I think that this motion is ready to go.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission deem the application complete and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Langdon Wind LLC, Langdon Renewables LLC transfer of site certificate, citing application case number PU-18-336.
Second.
This is a notice of opportunity for hearing. The commission originally issued a site certificate to this way back in 2007, amended it in 2008. Did another amendment in 2008, and then amended again last month. And now the company is requesting to transfer the certificate from, let's see, Langdon Wind to Langdon Renewables. If anybody has any comments or concerns or a request for a hearing, we need to hear that by October 22nd.
You have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'm just going to take this opportunity to point out, if any of these operators wonder, as we get to subsequent stages of our reclamation program with wind farms, why we have to be pretty intricate and detailed, here should be a perfect example why. The ink is barely dried on one order, and they're changing the name again to something else. And so someday, if there is a bankruptcy or something like that, and the state needs to come in and do a reclamation and a bond recovery, hopefully, it's going to be tough to follow all this and make sure that all these things are in place technically right, when it continues to be kind of a shell game of corporate names. And so here's why, as we move forward, I'm going to be insisting that we be awful detailed in those how those financial assurances and everything are filed with us.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is approved.
That's it for me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we will stand in recess. We'll take some questions from the press, and followed by about a 5 or 10 minute break, and then we'll come back and resume with the administrative portion of our meeting.
A simple question. How big is the Langdon Wind Farm proposed to be, I guess?
Boy, that would seem a simple question. I had trouble following that. Let's see. Stacy, do you know off the top of your head? Because it was 159 at the beginning, and then there was an expansion of 40.5, and then something was transferred off.
I think we previously removed the limitation.
Oh, so it is 159, but it can be, there is no limit. They can expand it beyond that.
If they add some bigger blades or something like that, we removed that precise limit.
Is that plant up and operating?
Yes.
Okay. Who's buying the electricity?
I think it has been for quite a while. Otter Tail, are you guys involved in this one?
I believe we have purchased some of the power off.
Okay.
Okay.
And a question, just so I'm clear.
Crazy.
What's the amount of the refund for MDU electric customers? Do you have a rough amount per customer?
It was $5.49, and then it changed by about 16 cents if you factor in the 3%.
Ryan, while you're looking up, I think we have to be clear here. Are you talking about the TCJA?
Which
refund, or there's going to be a refund on the electric rate case too, because the interim rates were higher than the regular rates.
I suppose you have a total.
So are you talking about the gas or the electric with your question?
I
was talking about the electric. Yeah.
Well,
so the TCGA. Okay.
No.
There's, I guess, the simplest way to look at it, if this is simple. The rates increased last July, the base rates increased, I believe, by $4.50. There were some other increases. I believe it was 82 cents, another 82 cents on top of that. This would have reduced the 549, which was 97% of it. So add another 16 cents if my math is correct, that would be 565. The TCJA essentially negates the 2017 tax increase. So But you have some under, you can't just look at base rate to base rate because you have riders that come in and out. Some get funneled into to rate cases. Some go out. This isn't a rate case. This is just looking at the TCJA. But that 3% for replacement of those underground cable systems. And one thing I didn't mention, the company did provide information that we requested during the work session. And this underground cable is failing at a higher rate. There's no question about that. Several of the companies that actually manufactured the cable aren't even in business anymore, which is very telling in itself. So I think from a clarity standpoint, consumers are going to get the full benefit of the TCJA, but I don't think there's any question that regardless, consumers will have to pay for accelerated replacement of these lines. It's not going to be avoided.
So eventually they'll probably come back with a rate case to do
Well, it's either going to be through a rate case or it could be a rider. Which is,
or they could find the ability to cover that with existing rates.
Yeah. I mean,
that's also an option.
Yeah, I take into account the fact that there's always repair and maintenance that's already baked in to the revenue that their revenue requirement and what they've been granted by the commission. That's already in. Does this push it above and beyond? And I think it does. I think it will.
Back to your original question, though, there's really two issues. One is how the rates will be impacted moving forward, and then how much of a refund they get for overcollection this year. And so I think we got to talk to our staff and get you those two numbers.
Right. But I think you said, Julie, earlier that, you know, overall, the amount going back to North Dakotans in their pocketbooks would be more than $8.5 million because of this action on MDU's electric?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Just for this piece, approximately $8.5 million.
Okay. And that's like an annual figure?
Ongoing annual revenue reduction. Yep.
Okay. Unless you had anything else. I think I missed this earlier, but what was the impact of the rate case with MDU Natural Gas? What's an average customer going to see reflected in their bills?
What's that?
$1.27.
Okay. That's an average residential customer.
But does that over current rates or over the rates before we gave them interim rates?
Yeah.
So actual customers will see a decrease.
That was the original.
From what they're paying today.
The $1.27 is over what they were paying before they filed the rate case. Their rates, compared to what they've been paying for almost a year, are actually going to be less. Because this will be a lower rate than what the interim rates were.
Right.
And then they'll get a refund from what they overpaid for the last different number of months since we approved the interim rates.
Right.
If it were just as simple.
Clear as mud.
Right. I mean, it's basically like the interim rates basically like never happened, right? Because if you're giving a refund, then...
Well, they happen up to the point that they are the same as what we just approved.
Okay.
Yep. So we'll go back and refund everything higher than that. Set the rates at what we approved today and give back everything else back to the customers that they paid that was too high.
In essence, our new rates that we're setting here become effective the day we pass the interim rates, and what was over-collected during that interim will be refunded.
Right.
The bottom line charge then is $20.80 per 87 cents per month for residential customers. That's just to bring the pipe to the home.
Just to what?
To bring the pipe to the home, right? That's not the cost of gas. That's just the cost.
Right.
Of
right. Yeah. Just to deliver to the meter, and then of course you have the energy charge, the consumption charge after that, which has been very favorable with low natural gas prices. These are really, you know, when you talk about, okay, so you've got rate cases which are complicated in themselves. You've got riders moving. Some might be shifting into base rate. Then you've got the TCJA, which on the surface is very simple. If you say, okay, the top tax rate is going from 35% to 21%, and that's pretty straightforward math. But it gets very complicated when you start looking at deferred income taxes on various assets and then trying to, eventually you do arrive at a number, but you know, it's been said repeatedly, we have an incredibly small staff, I think, in comparison to the Minnesota Commission, I believe I looked, and they have 40, right around 40 people doing this type of work. We just have a few, and they do incredibly good work.
We'll try not to complete two rate cases and tax cut on the same day in the future. I think it's driven everybody nuts.
Any other questions? Okay, we will reconvene at about 4:20.